Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, June 22nd, 2014. This is episode 1094. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try Citrix ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? I'm a little gruff here. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about, I'm a little gravelly, I apologize. Computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders. I was practicing my goal yell for the World Cup this afternoon, and goal, I guess I broke my voice. 8888, ask Leo. Only yes and no answers today, the chat room says. No, I'll give you full answers. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number, the chat room, and all of our content available on our website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. If you want to go there, you can join the chat room. And if I say something on the air that you want to either make a note of or find that website or that product, or say, no, you're wrong, you could do that at the website, techguylabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. You know, we've been talking for, how long has it been? About a year and a half, about an Apple Watch, an iWatch. And everybody and their brother has released health watches, except Apple, in that time. Samsung's going to apparently show some new ones at Google I.O., which is this week. Google has its big developers conference. It's so fun. June is a fun month because it kicks off with Apple's developer conference. And then we had a number of announcements in the middle, including the new Amazon Fire phone. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then Google gets the last word next week with its developers conference. And Google will probably release, they've even announced Android Wear, which is a platform for wearable computing, not just Google goggles, but watches. Motorola says by the end of the summer, so we have a few more months, by the end of the summer, Motorola will have a watch. They're going to call it the Moto 360. Samsung's been doing watches for a year now. The Galaxy Gear and the Gear Fit and the Gear 2. But they apparently have another watch they're going to announce. All of these watches, there's kind of two main areas of functionality for these watches. There's either health monitoring, and it all started, of course, with your heart rate. And your, well, I guess heart rate monitors were kind of the first, but pedometers even maybe have been around longer. So measuring your steps, your amount of your exercise, then the more fancy ones can measure heart rate, although not well. And then in theory, you could do some that do even more. It would be great to know your blood pressure, wouldn't it? Be great to know your VO2 max. Athletes like to know that. How efficiently you use oxygen as you work out. There's other measurements. I mean, it would be cool if a watch could do an electrocardiogram and warn you if you're about to have a heart attack. That'd be neat. Or your doctor could say, hey, Leo, you know, your blood pressure, we got to keep an eye on that. So would you set your watch to notify me every day what your current blood pressure reading is? These things would be useful. And Apple's kind of talked about this. They've talked about a health application that'll be on the next iPhone and iPad. And they've talked about a health kit. But they have not talked about a hardware device yet. And everybody else thinking, assuming Apple's going to do it, has been talking about it. So one thing is health. The other thing, and we've seen this too with the Pebble and others, is kind of an extension of your phone. Notifications when you get a text. Maybe even the ability to see the text and respond to it. I have the Galaxy, they don't call it a Galaxy anymore, the Samsung Gear 2 watch, which just came out. And you can even talk into it. You can give it voice commands, the S voice commands. You can, I used it over my weekend to shoot pictures and video. We went ziplining, and you can't really bring a camera when you're ziplining. Your hands are busy holding on for dear life. Ah! but you can tell your watch, take a picture or record video. And the watch accepts voice commands. It doesn't have a lot of storage, but when you get near your phone again, it just automatically copies those pictures over, and they're not bad. The Galaxy Gear also has some fitness capabilities, a pedometer, an exercise monitor. And then they have the Gear Fit, which has even more. So there's a lot of these. None of them, I have to tell you, I've tried them all. None of them really are any better than a glorified pedometer. I do know there are a lot of people who like the Pebble because it, you know, you don't have to take your phone out of your pocket. Oh, boy, that's a lot of work, huh? Oh, I hate doing that every day. With the Pebble, well, it's so funny. I was visiting a friend, and his teenage son looked at his wrist and then took out his phone. I said, you have a Pebble, don't you? He said, yeah. Because with the Pebble, you could see who's calling. You could feel the vibration before the phone rings, and you can see who's calling, and you can reject it. So that's interesting. So those are the two main functions, health and as an extension of your phone. And I don't know what Apple's planning, but I do know that according to Mark Gurman of 9 to 5 Mac, Apple is now teaming up with pro athletes under strict non-disclosure agreements to field test an iWatch. According to Mark Gurman at 9 to 5 Mac, Apple has invited athletes from Major League Baseball, the National Hockey League. It's kind of a quiet time for them right now, but, you know, maybe, you know, they do their workouts. And the NBA to come see Apple in Cupertino to brief them on the upcoming wearable device and to give them a chance to test it in professional conditioning environments. So that implies that the iWatch will definitely have health capabilities. In fact, we've seen the hires that Apple's done, and that seems very likely. Supposedly, Kobe Bryant, Kings right winger Dustin Brown, a player from the Boston Red Sox, also on the project. But they can't talk about it. However, when you see Kobe Bryant wandering around the Apple campus, it seems like that would lend some credence to the idea. And he was seen last month at the Apple campus, hanging out with Johnny Ive, Apple's chief designer. So maybe this fall we'll see an Apple iWatch. So far, though, even the Google Glass, I haven't found anything compelling. I've tried them all. I'm sad to say, bought many of them. Starting with the Fitbit, which was just a glorified pedometer. I've been playing with the Samsung Gear 2. The Basis watch, that's kind of an interesting one. Does your heart rate as well, but only when you're not exercising. So that's not really very useful. Would you like a wearable computer? You understand what's going on. At this point, companies are feeling desperate. It's become clear in the Silicon Valley, and this is true of Facebook and Google and everybody else, it's become clear in the Silicon Valley that it's not being good at the current thing, but being ready for the next thing that's most important. Some of these companies missed mobile, right? We're late to the game, Microsoft, late to the game with mobile. Facebook couldn't figure it out for the longest time, and it hit their stock price pretty hard in the earliest days. So everybody says, well, okay, we don't want to be late to the next party, but where is it? And everybody's looking for the party. And they're not, I have to say, they're not really doing it based on what you guys want or we want, because they can't figure out what consumers want. This is a perfect example is Facebook, which has desperately tried, has not had a hit with any of the apps it's released, Poke and Camera. They just released a new one, Slingshot, that's a dud. But they bought WhatsApp. They bought Instagram. They realize we don't know what the next big thing is, and nobody inside the company does because we're all blinded by the light, the success of our current company. They call it the innovator's dilemma. You've created something new. You've done a great invention. And then the problem is what you're not set up to figure out what the next one is. That's going to be somebody else. How do you keep a company alive and vital? So they're all looking, and they think wearables, a lot of them think wearables is the next best thing, next big thing. Even if nobody in their right mind. Are you clamoring? Are you ready? You tell me. 88, I can't wait to wear a computer on my head or wrist or ankle or ears. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. What is the next best thing? Do you know? Hey, I like it. Yorkshire Lad in the chat room says better battery life. See, that's too pedestrian. That's too mundane. But you're right, exactly right. That's exactly what we want. 8888 Ask Leo. Call me, let's talk. I'll croak at you. But I'd love to hear from you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. Our bachelorette today is the lovely Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. And that's a show, isn't it? The Bachelorette. There's The Bachelor, and then there's The Bachelorette. And then there's Honey Boo Boo, right? Ugh. See, I know pop culture. I know all about it. Is Honey Boo Boo the Bachelorette? No.
She will be one day, I guess.
Yeah.
Because they are going to have a hard time marrying that thing off.
Wow. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is where we talk about computers and technology and the smartphones and the... Would you wear a smartwatch, Heather, if you had the choice? Like, it could measure your activities. It would tell you, you know, vital statistics. But it would also, if your phone was ringing, tell you who's calling. If you're getting texts in the middle of the night, you could delete them on the smartwatch. Would that be a... See, you don't wear a wristwatch, do you? Oh, you do? Oh, very elegant. That's like a Chopard or something. Well, would you replace that fine piece of jewelry with a techno jewelry?
Yeah, that's a good question because I would really be concerned first about what it looked like.
Yeah.
So I'm not feeling this on my wrist.
Well, this is another interest. So talking about this Apple, by the way, Apple's never said they're doing a watch, but everybody's absolutely convinced that they are. And partly because of the hirings. And one of the people Apple hired to run their retail operation, but also to consult, is the woman who was the CEO of Burberry, Angela Arendt. She was she's an American, but she was knighted by the Queen because of her great service to Burberry, which is an old British fashion. They made raincoats and scarves and plaid, and it was very stuffy and you know, fuddy-duddy, and it was your grandma's stuff until Angela Arendt came along and made it hip, like Abercrombie and Fitch. I remember Abercrombie and Fitch. They used to outfit my jungle expeditions. You know, they were like, and then all of a sudden the kids are really into Abercrombie and Fitch, right?
Yeah, just marketing.
It's marketing. That's just another, Mentos, the fresh maker, was grandma candy. When I was a young man, it was grandma candy. But then in the 80s, this thing called MTV came along, and Mentos kind of started buying ads on MTV, and it became hip. Mentos, they turned it around. It's still grandma candy, but because you saw it on MTV, it was kind of hip. So it's possible to do this. So I figure that Apple, because they've hired fashion people, maybe they want, but then how expensive is it? Because a good fashion watch, we're talking $500 at least, right? For something, you know, that's attractive and jewelry style, as opposed to, because you got to have all the technology in there and you have to have the jewelry. This is a challenge.
This is interesting.
And by the way, to top it off, people have stopped wearing watches because they have the time on their smartphone. They don't need a watch.
Right?
What, you wear it as a fashion accessory.
I love this thing.
Do you look at the time?
Yeah.
But look at all the jewelry you're wearing. You're wearing like 12 bracelets, 4 rings, and a watch. So you like jewelry?
Yeah. It's
but it's
much.
Jewelry to you, I think. It's more than, it's not, it's a, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
agree.
Not the time. You've got clocks all around you. You got your phone.
Sure.
It's jewelry.
You're right.
See, that's what Apple has to kind of figure out. How do we get people to buy watches again?
And I think it's such an interesting point because I can't stand how the Google Glass looks on a face, and that right there would keep me from ever using
dorky.
It, despite how dorky. Handy and wonderful it
right.
might be.
No, because it's dorky looking, and I don't care who you get to design the fashion frames, it's dorky looking. And this is a problem the Segway had. Remember the Segway, the two-wheel thing? And when people first saw it, Bill Gates said, they're going to reinvent cities around this thing. This thing is going to change the world. The Segway is amazing. Everybody's raving. They call it Project Ginger. And nobody knew what it was. This is 10 years ago. And we were all, what is it? Dean Kamen, he's a genius. What has he got? And then they came out with a Segway. And there was a problem. You stand on it, you're 10 feet tall, and you look like a giraffe, a geeky giraffe. And they realized there's no market for this. The thing died. Even though it was amazing technology, it balances. It's fun. If you've ever ridden a Segway, it's fun. But the only people now who use Segways are tours. They do Segway tours around San Francisco and other cities. And mall cops. And if you ever see, and we do have, there's one couple in Petaluma that rides Segways. And that's it. They go down the street, and you see them, and you go, dorks. And under your breath, dork. Right?
And like everyone in this town.
We all know them because they're the dorky couple that rides around in their Segway. So I think that's exactly what Google Glass is headed.
Did you catch the segment on Daily Show?
It was very funny. So John Stewart on the Daily Show. I can't remember the reporter who did it, but they gathered six, they call them glass explorers, people who wear Google Glass. All six of them had been assaulted. One of them had his glass stolen and thrown and stomped on. Another one was in a bar fight because she was wearing Google Glass and refused to turn it off. And they talked to these people and they mocked them mercilessly. And then the reporter made his own with an Instamatic camera and a phone strapped to his head, and people ran when they saw him coming. I think this is what happens in technology, is sometimes as technologists, we love the technology so much, we forget that these are humans. Customers are humans. They're not Borgs. They're not robots. 8888-ASK-LEO. Who should I talk to? Who should I kick off the show with, Heather?
We have got to start with Ross up in Ontario.
Tilsonburg. Hello, Ross. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's great to talk to you. Been a long-time fan since ZDTV came to Canada in 2001.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was a red letter day.
Yes, I wanted to know, I know you can do Linux and virtualization in Windows, but can you do Mac OS X?
No, because Apple won't let you. So, and the way Apple prevents that is they make their operating system, OS X, dependent on firmware. That's a hardware chip in the computer. And while you can get the disk for OS X or the download for OS X, you can't run it in virtualization, because in order to do that, you'd have to emulate the hardware that is in a Macintosh computer. And to do that would be Apple's very strict about their trademarks. You could reverse engineer it, but you'd get sued and you'd lose. In fact, that's what's happened. So unfortunately, no, the only way to run a Mac is to buy one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A tech guy. Of course, somebody's going to rush to correct me and say, well, wait a minute. Of course you can run Macintosh in emulation or on a PC. You can illegally. You can do something called a Hackintosh. And the name says it all. It's a hack. You can't run updates, which means it's a security problem, because the update will often break the hack. It's a violation of Apple's trademarks. So it's stealing the Macintosh operating system. Apple gives it, and I feel like in this case, this is one where I really don't want to encourage it, because Apple doesn't put copy protection on OS X, its operating system. They don't put serial numbers on it, and they give it away for free. So I feel like this is a case of a company trusting you. So let's not violate the trust. When a company makes it impossible for you, because copy protection, in a way, that has the reverse effect, doesn't it? It's like, well, you don't trust me. You think I'm a thief, so I guess I'll live up to your, your estimation. No, that's wrong to do it. It's wrong to do it in any respect. Or stealing's always bad. But I just feel like when Apple's giving this stuff away, and they're not putting copy protection on it, it just seems poor form to make a Hackintosh. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Let's move on. Roger, Monument, Colorado. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Roger.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
Very well. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, listen, I would wear a smartwatch, but I wouldn't wear it for the watch. I would wear it for what it was going to do for me.
Well, and I've been wearing all of these. I don't mind looking like a dork, and I've been wearing them all.
My wife and I have been wearing a device that, the Fitbit device, but especially for her, it's been good because of knowing how far she's exercising, right, and what she's doing with it. So if I can get something like that, great. If it can tell me more things about what's going on with my body or help me with my golf swing or something like that.
The Fitbit and these pedometer watches are useful, not so much because they tell you how you've done, but because if you're close to your goal, It's a great incentive. Just do a little more. Walk up the stairs. Walk from the parking lot. Right. Park farther away. And I found that I did more exercise because I was aware of it. Just as if you log what you're eating, you're more likely to eat healthily because you're aware of it. So I agree. They're useful in that regard. And I have worn them all, every one of them, from the Fitbit to the Jawbone Up to the Nike Fuel Band to the Basis Watch to the Galaxy Watches. The problem I have is, A, the kinds of exercise I do, most of them don't monitor. They don't monitor weightlifting. They don't monitor biking. They don't monitor Pilates. They monitor walking and running. They're designed because they're pedometers. So
we're sleeping.
They do monitor your sleeping, but I find them uncomfortable to wear at night. So I sleep more, right? Yeah, you don't sleep well because you got a big honking thing on your wrist. Anyway, no, I think there's definite utility. And if they could get these things to measure some really vital statistics, there'd be a real health benefit to that.
Right, and that's where I think the real value comes. But, hey, let's hop over to the question here. We had a disc the other day that we were moving some furniture around, and, yeah, I did the wrong thing, and, no, we didn't have it backed up, and, yes, I understand that should have happened.
What did you do, drop it out the window?
No, it was sitting on a portable, thing that you can move around that holds your laptops on.
Yeah.
And a solid piece one, and we just were trying to put up another thing, and boop, it didn't shut things off when we were starting. So anyway, question for you, two questions. One's a follow-up question to the first one. So when you go to disk restoration, because we really do need to restore these disks, is it better to go with the OEM that manufactured that disc for the restoration, or go with the companies that kind of specialize in this disc restoration? And then secondly, if you go with that company that does a disc restoration, there's some that do, I've gotten some quotes. I actually had one that was a quote for a fixed price and one that was a quote from, it could be anywhere from $500 to $2,000.
And that's frankly probably more realistic. Do you have to understand what things can go wrong with a hard drive to understand what's going on here? If you just drop the hard drive, so it was on and running and it hit the ground. From how high?
32 inches.
Okay. So it's unlikely that you physically damaged the drive. Much more likely that it was the rapid disconnection during a write that caused data to be spewn over the drive that makes it impossible to boot the drive. So that's a very important distinction.
Yeah, and you can't do any of the normal restore disk type of thing, and because it won't even boot up to where you can get it.
Well, maybe you did physically damage the drive. So there's a bright line between a software problem, a data problem that's usually cheap and easy to fix, and a hardware problem, and that's now we're talking thousands. Because in order to here's what may have happened when it hit the ground. Maybe something jarred loose. The circuit board got torqued, or something jarred loose from the circuit board. That could be significant because that means now you've got to find somebody who can replace the circuit board. Now, that is not as expensive as the worst case, which is that as the drive hit the ground, the head inside the drive either got bent or scraped the drive.
Right.
Now, that's unlikely because almost all hard drives now have detectors in there that will immediately park the head, pull it away from to protect you against this. But if that did happen, and it does sometimes happen, that's the most expensive because then you have to go to somebody who can open up the drive and replace those parts, and they have to do that in a clean room environment in bunny suits. That's thousands. So you need to kind of figure out what's wrong with the drive.
So at this point, what's wrong with the drive is it's the bunny suit time.
You're pretty sure of that.
Estimation, I'm pretty sure of that based upon the fact of the sound that it makes when it starts up.
Oh, what's it sound like when it starts up?
Type of thing.
That's not
the type of sound.
That's not. So what you may hear when a drive is starting up and it can't read the sectors, which can be a soft error, you'll hear it retrying, and that's a. That's okay. That does not mean something's wrong with the physical drive. That's just the drive trying really hard to read a sector. So don't assume that's just the head going back and forth trying to read a sector.
So are you suggesting that there's...
If you heard... Well, it depends. If you... Yeah. If it seems most likely because it's 3 feet, It seems most likely. Drives are pretty well cushioned and protected nowadays, unless it's a very old drive. But you may have knocked something loose. Was it a USB external drive, or was it
USB fire connector.
It was a firewire external drive.
Firewire.
So the first thing I would do is take the drive out of the enclosure. The enclosure may have been damaged. Have you done that?
I've tried that, and I tried just to connecting it up with a, the USB wire, just wire connector type things, and tried to go in that way, and that doesn't help either. I can't get it to come up on either a Windows device or a Mac device.
You don't even see any hardware?
No.
Okay.
No.
So that means, what you do is you slowly work your way down to the worst case scenario. You start with the best case scenario. So you can't even see the drive when it's removed from the case. And we now know it's not the external case. Could be the circuit board. In fact, I'm leaning towards the circuit board on the drive. You know, when you look at it, there's that green circuit board on there. Now, that's a fairly cheap thing to replace. You have to get exactly the same model, and you can unscrew it and replace it with another one. A company will do that. That's the $500 repair. But if that doesn't fix it, then they have to open the drive, and now you're thousands. There's no way around that. You have no copy of that data. You have to get it back.
Let's not even go.
Drive Savers is the one I'd go to. I really, these guys are good. DriveSavers.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy show will continue. But first, a word from Citrix's ShareFile. We, in order to do the radio show, I have to share files. In fact, you know, I would guess that pretty much every business has to share files. In fact, a lot of business email has stuff attached, contracts, presentations, promos. There's kind of a problem with that. A, you've heard me say it time and time again, don't open attachments. Well, if you're sending attachments for business, you're probably wondering, well, Leo, how am I supposed to send those attachments if nobody's going to open them? Attachments also have other problems. They're not secure. Anybody can read them along the way. And finally, nowadays, files are so big, you're going to get a bounce back in many cases. You're sending a CAD drawing or audio or video presentation. Even a PowerPoint file sometimes is too big for the mail servers. That's why you should use Citrix's share file, the easiest way to share files in business. You're not sending an attachment. You're sending a secure link. You might say, well, Leo, that's too hard for me. I don't know how to do that. Well, the good news is you don't have to know anything. It's very easy. They have Outlook plugins that make it look just like you're attaching files. The way I set it up is I have share file folders on my desktop, which are automatically synchronized to the share file cloud. And I can even use my smartphone. I can browse the share file cloud, and I can send files from the smartphone. Even though the phone doesn't have those files, it's sharing that link. And when you share a link on ShareFile, you could say how long it's good for. You could say how many times the file can be downloaded. You can even say, I need a password. I need an email. You can completely control it. HIPAA compliant because it's encrypted and no one can see it but your intended recipient. Compliant with the regulations in the financial industry, many industries. ShareFile is fabulous. Designed by Citrix for business. I want you to try it today. I've got 30 days free for you when you visit ShareFile.com. Go to the top of the page, and where it says podcast listeners, click here, click that, and use our promo code TechGuy. And then pick your industry, because they will customize it for a variety of different industries. TechGuy, there's the promo code. And not just medical or financial, everything. Accounting, advertising, consulting, energy, food service, government, manufacturing, great for lawyers. You can request files, too. And the nice thing is your recipients do not have to set up a share file account or anything. When they get a share file, they just get a simple link to download. They don't have to be sophisticated computer users. Not at all. They just have to be able to get email. Visit ShareFile.com and sign up today. 30 days free. Click the microphone at the top of the page and use the offer code TechGuy. ShareFile.com. This is the song of the summer, isn't it? Pharrell's done it twice in a row now.
That's right.
Last show, we were trying to figure out what the song of the summer for this summer is. I mean, it's early yet. Summer began yesterday, so it's not official. But 2 years ago, it was LMFAO. And what was that called? Party All Night and Dance All Day or something. And then And then Robin Thicke's song, which I can't remember the name of.
Blurred Lines?
Blurred Lines was last year's summer song. Summer song is the one you hear on the radio nonstop. Well, wait a minute. Now I'm dating myself. Nobody listens to music on the radio anymore, do they? I think it's all talk and sports and stuff. The song on your iPod. Wait a minute. It's not the iPod anymore. It's not. Nobody listens to iPods anymore either, do they? It's the song you hear over and over on Pandora? No.
Where are we hearing these?
Where are we hearing? How do you become the song of the summer in this modern digital age? I don't know. But you do. You hear it everywhere. That song is. It makes me happy. But you know that just like Bobby McFerrin, Don't Worry, Be Happy. Ugh. Right. That made, after a while, made people unhappy. And you know this song will do the same if it hasn't already. You hear it too much, then you're unhappy. Don't play this song. I'm going to... In store sound systems. That's where you hear it. In the grocery store. Kmart. Over and over. In the elevator. 8888 to ask Leo. We're talking about hard drive recovery. It's always a good idea if you've got... And well, first of all, number one, make a backup for crying out loud. Hard drives fail. They fall off of desks. They just die spontaneously. They give up the ghost. And if your only copy of something is on a hard drive, then you've lost it. And unless you're willing to spend thousands, and by the way, there's no guarantee. You take it to Drive Savers or one of these places where it takes it apart, and they're pretty good. I've seen them recover stuff from amazing places, but there's no guarantee. There's nothing to replace a good backup. I don't want to scold anybody. This is not about scolding anybody for what happened. It's too late. But for you who have a copy of something precious on a hard drive or on a computer and you don't have another copy somewhere else, do it. Make a backup, please. I beg of you. I beg of you. Zygote says, nobody goes to Kmart. It's all Amazon. So where do you hear the summer song? For me, it was in the bus, the school bus. On the last few weeks of school, they listened. It was I was going to school in Santa Cruz on the school bus, and they'd play a Salinas station, a rock station, KDON, and I would hear the hit, right? Because they play it every 20 minutes. In those days, if a song was a hit, you'd play it every 18 minutes in rotation, three times an hour. I'm happy. At the dentist's office. Now you hear it. You see, you know what? It's the one with a million, billion views on YouTube. That's the summer song. That's how we know. So, Roger, go. I'm sorry you lost your data, or you might lose your data. I'm sorry you lost your hard drive. Yeah, try Drive Savers. It does sound like it's a physical failure, I'm afraid. Naomi in Denver, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Naomi.
Hi, Leo. Hey, drink some pineapple juice. That will help.
Is that good for my throat? I don't know. You know, I'm not in pain. I don't have a cold. I'm not sick. It just it's like I've worn it out.
Yeah, that happens with us singers. We always do the pineapple thing because lemon juice is too rough.
Lemon juice is too tangy.
Well, it's too rough on your throat. It takes that coating off.
Pineapple juice. Pineapple juice. Amber, get me some pineapple juice. Okay, well, so now I'm going to shout, and that's going to be good.
Also, those beats from that Apple bought, those are so that they can monitor your temperature, respiration, and...
In your ear.
Perspiration.
In your ear. Yeah, Apple has a patent on this, and there, in fact, already are companies that use ear monitors, because your ear, unlike your wrist, isn't moving around as much. It's easier to see, and it's closer to your blood supply. So you can measure things like heart rate because you can see the blood flowing.
Yeah,
so that's the theory.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need to buy Beats to do that, frankly.
It's probably a little bit more accurate than those wristbands.
Right. A number of people have, and this has been a rumor. Well, actually, it was a phony rumor. Somebody put it on Secret and then every tech journalist picked it up. I didn't pick it up, but everybody else picked it up and reported it. And then the guy said, well, I just made that up, actually. But it's a reasonable rumor, especially since Apple does have patents in that area, and they did just buy a headphone company.
Yeah, they bought a couple patents, they said.
I think that's interesting. Would you wear them in your ear?
Well, it's earbuds. Everybody wears earbuds.
Yeah, but they wear them when they're listening to music. They don't wear them all the time.
Yeah, I was always wondering how you can tell the beat from the music to the beat of your heart.
Yeah. Okay, we'd like to measure your heart rate, so turn off the sound and just wear your earbuds for no apparent reason. I don't. You know, this is the problem with wearable computing, is you have to wear something. And I, you know, I mean, if you could knit it into the fiber of my shirt, maybe. But I don't want to wear headgear, earphones, wristwatch. I don't want to have to wear anything. But anyway, we'll see. Well, I like it, Naomi. What can I do for you?
Hey, I was wanting to know about Channel Master. Will it take the place of the desktop set? In other words, you know, I've got the cable and I use a desktop, digital set-top box. And I'm wondering if the Channel Master...
So here's what you have to do is you have to first see if your cable company offers cable card.
I don't want a cable. I've cut the cable.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see. You don't want to keep the cable. All right. So what you'd like to do is record. You want to record over the air broadcasts.
Yeah.
Not Roku, because you don't need to record that.
Right,
just over the air. Yeah, Channel Master will do that. Now, there's two companies that do this. TiVo and Channel Master are the big ones. I have not ever used a Channel Master. I own a TiVo and love it. But Channel Master has one advantage over TiVo. You don't have to pay a monthly fee because the guide is free.
That's what's interesting to me, but I just want to make sure that it's the replacement for the digital set-top box.
Well, you don't need a set-top box anymore because the set-top box was decoding the cable. So that's what a set-top box does. You don't need it.
No, it's if you don't have cable or if you have the old televisions, like I have an old Samsung Plasma, you have to have the set-top box.
Well, you have to have an antenna.
Well, yeah, I've got an antenna.
And what you're saying is that your TV doesn't have a tuner?
A tuner.
You can't change channels on your TV. You have to change
it.
Okay, you don't need a set-top box. You could plug the antenna directly into the TV and watch TV, just like we always have. The set-top box is designed to decode cable, trust me.
Next question.
It's a replacement for the set-top box.
Okay, so how about the unified remote? Can it, they're saying that it can run everything there is, so can it run all of the, like the ceiling fans and some of the remotes and stuff? Around your house?
Well, that's a big question. You'd have to have a device attached to those devices that use a remote control. If that's the case, then a universal remote probably could do it. It can simulate almost any signal. There's only one little catch. So that's the setup. You have to have a remote control for those devices. The catch would be some remote controls use infrared. They actually are line of sight. They use light. And some use radio frequencies. They can do it around the corner. So you'd have to have the right remote control for that. Almost all of those devices are going to be infrared. So if you have an infrared universal remote, it should work.
Okay.
And I'm thinking... If it's an older HDTV, the reason you might need a set-top box is to decode the digital over-the-air signal. Is that what you mean?
Well, yes, that is correct.
I see. I don't know if a Channel Master does the digital decoding. I think it does. Otherwise, it really wouldn't work because nobody has over-the-air analog anymore.
Yeah, because it shows in the advertising that all you do is, you know, it's talking about cutting the cable and everything else.
It has to be digital because no broadcast is analog. Very few broadcasts are analog anymore. So, yes, you don't. It would replace the digital decoder on your TV.
Yeah.
So. You need a digital decoder because your TV is older and doesn't understand digital.
Yeah, it's an old Samsung.
Now I understand. Yes, you're right. So, it would replace that.
Okay, and for all the people in Colorado that wonder about plasma televisions, they are fine. I have an old one.
That was part of one of the issues. Denver, of course, the Mile High City.
Mm-hmm.
That means nominal air pressure is lower than it is at sea level. And a plasma has gas in the cells. And the fear is that it would degas at high altitude. Denver, not high enough. You'd have to be higher. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 888-88-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5278. 5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Our website, techguylabs.com. And you can reach us and talk high tech with us. Ask questions. We'd love to hear from you. 8888 Ask Leo. Ted, Glen Ellen, California, just up the road a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ted.
Hi, Tad.
Tad. Hi, Tad.
Yeah. Howdy. I have a need to run Windows on my Mac. I'm a lifelong Mac user. I'm not a techie.
Yeah.
But and I know there's Boot Camp. And
So there's two ways to run Windows on a Macintosh computer. It's a Windows. The good news is once Apple went to the Intel processor, the hardware on the Macintosh is pretty much the same as the hardware on a generic Windows PC. So it's an easy thing to do to run Windows on it. That's why Apple released Boot Camp. So one of the ways to run Windows is to just put Windows on the hard drive, and instead of starting up with OS X, starting up with Windows. And it's just like a Windows PC. In fact, Walt Mossberg, when he was reviewing Macs at the Wall Street Journal, wrote that the best Windows PC he ever had was a MacBook Air. Because it was a Macintosh, but it ran Windows. Now, that's one way. Maybe a more convenient way to run Windows is in they call it virtualization. It allows you to run Windows at the same time as you're running the Macintosh operating system. It's just running Windows in a little window. And that's great if you just need a quick program or there's something simple you need to run that only uses Windows. It's not great for gaming because you're sharing resources between two different operating systems. So if you need high-speed performance, Boot Camp is better. You can do virtualization for free by Oracle makes a program called VirtualBox that you can download. It's not the most sophisticated of the virtualization programs, but it has the advantage of being the cheapest. Is it VirtualBox?
Yeah,
VirtualBox.org.
And so
that you can download and install as a program, as a Macintosh program. And then when you run it, it will say, okay, give me a Windows disk or a Windows installer. You'll install Windows. And what it does is instead of installing on the hard drive as a whole different disk partition, it actually is just a file, a 10-gigabyte file that contains all of the Windows stuff. So if you need speed, you can run use the Apple solution. If you don't need speed, you just want convenience, then use VirtualBox. There are commercial programs, Parallels and VMware Fusion, that are slightly more, that do more perhaps than VirtualBox, maybe a little faster. I use VMware Fusion with Windows 8, and it works quite well. So is this because there's a Windows program you need to run?
Well, I have a need to download some like a firmware update for my radio control stuff.
Ah, and it uses Windows.
Most of them use Windows, yeah.
I've had the same situation. This is not unusual. People make the software, but it's a small market, so they just make it for Windows, and they don't bother doing a Macintosh version.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a case where because you have to communicate with hardware, usually virtualization will do fine. You know, when you connect the radio control stuff, it's probably by a USB, I would guess, yeah?
Yeah.
When you first connect it, the virtualization program will say, well, do you want me to do access this as a Mac or access this as Windows? Because it can't do both. It has to pick. And once you've accessed it as Windows, you should be able to just run it straight. If not, then you can always use the Boot Camp method. Now, here's the deal. You need a copy of Windows.
That was my real question, Leo.
You got to buy Windows.
Yeah, and I don't want to pay $100 for it.
$200.
So, $200, okay, even worse.
Yeah.
So, I go to...
There's no choice.
They've got these Windows 7 or XP versions for like $30 to $60.
Ah, you know what? That's fine. In fact, this is a case where XP would probably be a good choice.
Uh-huh.
And it is cheap. Now, there's risk when you buy this on eBay because Microsoft doesn't want you to do this. So they've put three different kinds of copy protection on Windows. And if the serial number has been used before, in other words, if you can buy the disk, but if anybody's ever activated it on a different computer, you can't activate it.
Yeah.
So,
they've got all this stuff with the COA, and they include a hard drive or a RAM or some sticker, and it's just all Greek to me. I'm not really...
The issue really is the copy protection. The bottom line, the copy protection means that if somebody has activated that copy of Windows, if it's been used, you will not be able to use it, and you've just thrown away $30. So you've got to get it from somebody reliable.
Yeah.
It cannot be a used version. Now, sometimes there are disks of XP floating around that were never used, a computer that was purchased but never ran Windows. You know, if I decide to buy a computer, almost always a PC comes with Windows, but what if I want to put Linux on it? I'll never use that Windows. Then I might sell it on eBay.
Uh-huh.
So that's the key, but it's very hard to know ahead of time on eBay whether the seller is selling you something you can use or taking advantage of you.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Buyer beware.
Buyer beware. I would, you know, spend $100 and buy it on Amazon. I mean, at least you know you're getting a legitimate copy.
Okay. Well, all right. Thanks, Leo.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. You might be able to get a legitimate copy of, you know, older version of Windows for less. You don't need Windows 8 for sure. In fact, you probably don't want Windows 8. Windows 7, Windows Vista, or Windows XP, all would be fine. The problem is that you just can't be sure what you're getting is what you think you're getting. Dano in the chat room said Microsoft told him to go to Best Buy. So here's do check newegg.com. You're going to see to buy a full version of Windows 8 is $200. And everybody in the chat room said, oh, no, Leo, you can get it for $100, no problem. But what you're not getting, you're not doing it legitimately. You're getting what's called the OEM version, a version that is not intended for an end user to buy. You're getting a version that's intended for a manufacturer of a computer to buy. And Newegg is kind of flaunting that. Microsoft turns a blind eye, so I guess it's okay. What Newegg will usually do, or other companies, when they sell you an OEM version, is make sure you're buying other hardware, that you have to actually pretend you're a system integrator, and that's what this Windows is for. So, let your ethics be the guide. I paid $200 because I wanted a full version of Windows 8 for installation on in virtualization. And so, if you can find it for $100 and you feel comfortable with it, go ahead. But I paid $200. Thank you, Ted. Appreciate the call. Charlie in Moreno Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Yeah, I've been listening to your show for quite a while, and it's a great show. And this is the first call. And I have a dilemma. I'm an older guy. I'm not very tech savvy, but my kids are. And what I need is to date myself. I still use, believe it or not, those old PDA Palm Pilots.
Wow, those are great, but they never stop working.
Yeah, they just keeps on working. It works great. I have a Palm One, the Tungsten E2.
Yeah, I had one of those. They're great. They're not even. You know what's funny? They're not even that old. What is it? 10 years old? 12 years old? It's not that old.
Yeah. But you know, I like using it because you know, the font is big, and I like using it for the contacts. What I like about the contacts on my PDA versus the iPhone 5, which I have, is that...
Wait a minute, you have an iPhone 5 and you still use the Palm?
That's what the kid says.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm not laughing. That's great. If that's great. If you love it, it works. What's wrong with that? Hey, hang on a bit because we have to take a little break for the commercials here. Hold on a second. We'll come right back after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking to Charlie in Moreno Valley, who's doing a wonderful thing. Instead of getting that Palm Pilot Tungsten, throwing it on the landfill, he's still using it. And he loves it. So nothing wrong with that. Even though you got an iPhone 5, which does everything it does, right?
Well, one thing I do like about the Palm One, especially with my contacts list, is I can categorize all my phone numbers under medical, dental, legal, work, which I don't believe the iPhone 5 is able to do. Am I mistaken?
Categories, so you could say work, and gosh, you know, I think it does that, but that is a nice feature. And I do that in my Android phone. I'm pretty sure the iPhone will support that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not very tech-savvy guy.
Let me look.
I go to my contact list on my iPhone, I just kind of keep scrolling until I find the person I want to call, whereas on my Palm One...
You just narrow it down.
Yeah, I go ahead.
So I think that's a very good point. You can, in fact, have a category for contacts on the iPhone, but I don't think there's a way to view by category, which eliminates kind of that feature.
That's nice. Kind of like it. Yeah. On the Palm Pilot, is I hit contacts, and boom, on the right side, it shows up all numbers under medical, dental, legal, whatever category I want to make. But anyways, the reason why I call, I was wondering, one big problem I have that's going to kill me sooner or later is if this breaks down or if I lose it, there goes all my info.
So I have a friend. He actually hosts a show for me called Security Now. He's a security guru who felt the same way. So he bought back when the Palm, I can't remember which version he bought. It might have been the Tungsten. He bought 7 of them and put them in the fridge. Because he knows, just as you do, that someday this is going to die, but at least I'll have one in cold storage. I can pull it out.
Yeah, my wife actually has one that she's never used. But the thing is, again, I can't sync it to my computer because I researched it one time. And I believe it says something about I can only sync it to a computer that's got a 64-bit, the 16-bit. So
The Palm Desktop may not work. I don't know. Try it. I bet the Palm Desktop still works. Have you tried it?
I think I tried to sync it one time, and not being a real tech-savvy guy, it didn't work. I guess I could...
Yeah, I'm trying to remember now. I think the Palm Sync was a serial connected to a serial port, and that's part of the problem because the serial ports are no longer available on any modern computer. They replaced it with USB. But I'm pretty sure you could get a USB to serial adapter.
A 64-bit.
Don't know, because what happens is the modern operating systems emulate 16 bits. The only issue is, will the Palm Desktop run on your computer? I think it will. So that's the question. Does it run? Install the Palm Desktop on your computer and see if it works. If it does, then the next thing is, how do I get the hardware connection?
Yeah, I don't have the cable.
Yeah. Well, the cable... The cable has to... You don't have a TX. You have a Tungsten. It's a Palm One Tungsten, right?
Yeah, Tungsten E2.
I'm trying to figure out if they had made the switch. The cables initially were serial port, and then eventually they went to USB. I think it's serial, which it looks like, instead of being a little flat thing with a tongue, it is my geometry has left me, but it is a kind of a rectangle with 9 pins in it.
I don't know if I have one of those, but...
But what you need is a converter. Well, you can buy them on Amazon that convert the serial to USB. Then you need a driver, and actually the desktop will run, but Dan is saying the driver will not.
Actually, I don't even have a desktop. I use my laptop.
Laptop, desktop, same thing, yeah.
You can tell me if it's kind of dated. It's an old HP Pavilion DV6000. Is that pretty old?
Yeah, it's newer than the Palm. that's the good news. It works with your iPhone, right?
Yeah. But my original question, do you know of any similar type handheld devices out there, or maybe an app?
So all you really care about is that you can sort the contact list by groups.
That's one thing I like.
Anything else you need?
Well, I like the memo part of the Tungsten also.
See, what's happened in the modern world is that you have a contact list and you have a separate program for memos. You know, it's not one desktop, but it's all of them. It's all individual apps.
Yeah. One big thing is, you know, like everybody else, I have so many usernames and passwords for everything. Trying to find a safe place to store them.
Yeah, you want that's software that's called LastPass. And you can it's free for your computer, lastpass.com.
Latch?
Last, like the final one you'll ever use again.
Oh, LastPass.
It's a LastPass, and that's a great, LastPass.com, a great program for your computer.
Uh-huh.
And you put all your passwords in there. You remember one master password, and everything else is secure and encrypted and protected.
Oh, I think I tried it one time, but I'll go ahead and try it again.
Any Android phone will let you group by a category, so that would solve that problem. But iPhones do not. And that's because Apple's just in its infinite wisdom has decided not to, and you don't have any other choice. There may be another contact program, though, that you could use on the iPhone that would do that. I think the best thing to do would be to try to find a way to make it work on your iPhone. Then you only have to carry one device around.
iPhone.
Here's one thing that I would recommend. I use Google for my contacts and my notes. Google has a free note application for the iPhone called Keep. Google Keep. And the contacts will sync up with your Apple contacts. So Keep will let you keep. Actually, Apple has its own reminders app or notes app, which is actually pretty good. I think, truthfully, you can do everything you want to do on the iPhone 5. What we need to find you, though, is one contact manager that will let you sort by groups or categories. Android will. But iPhone won't. And that's just because Apple just, I don't know why, didn't build that feature in. LastPass is free on the computer, on the laptop. If you could also put it on your iPhone, but you have to pay $1 a month for the premium version. And, apparently there are Palm emulators for the iPhone. Ah, that's interesting. Let's find something for you that emulates. Wouldn't that be cool? Something that does the Palm desktop on your iPhone. All right, I'm going to take that as a challenge. Let's find that. Hey, thanks for the call, Charlie. Keep using that Palm. I love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now, Heather has come to the rescue. She says you can, in fact, have groups on your iPhone. No problem. The reason it's confusing is you have to create the groups off the iPhone on your iCloud account or on a computer. Is that right, Heather? Or these are groups that existed before?
It does not appear that way.
You can create groups? You can assign somebody to a group?
It'll start you out with a handful.
Yeah.
Your at max, your family and friends.
Right. And then you can assign people to new groups. And then in the upper, you're saying the upper left-hand corner, and you're using iOS 7, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In the upper left-hand corner of the Contacts app, you can choose which group. And then it sorts them. Seems like this is exactly what he wanted. So maybe he doesn't need a Palm desktop emulator. Let's move into the future, or at least the last few years. 8888, Ask Leo. Thank you, Heather. Fred is on the line from Upland, California. Hi, Fred. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, Leo. I'm remodeling my house, and I basically have a blank slate, and all the walls are out, and I'm adding on so I could do whatever I want. What kind of technology should I be looking at?
You know, this is a question, an eternal question, and in the old days I always said, well, you put Ethernet in the wall, Cat 5 cable in the wall, and then you'll be ready for anything. But a couple of things happened. First of all, wireless networking became prevalent. You didn't need to put anything in the wall because Wi-Fi just goes right through the wall. And then Cat 5 turned out not really to be as fast as you need. It's hard to future-proof. The latest version of Ethernet cable, Cat 5e or Cat 6, would give you higher speeds. And, you know, in 10 years, you might really want the ability to send 10 gigabits a second down the wire because you're watching high-def or even, you know, ultra-high-def video from your server down the hall. On the other hand, in 10 years, we might all be wireless and you don't need any wire at all. So it's kind of hard to predict. One thing that is probably safe is not putting in wiring, but putting in a conduit. And you could pull something through it now, whether it's Cat 6 or fiber or something. But just the fact that you've got conduit means it'd be easy to pull a new cable if the technologies, and they will, change. So I guess right now my suggestion, if money's no object, is to put Cat 6 Ethernet in there. But do it in a conduit so you can always pull something new in there. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense.
The fiber optic cables are pretty cheap. The problem with that is the switches, which are not. And plus, you'll have to convert in most cases from one thing to another. If you put Ethernet in there, the Ethernet's going to work with everything, your cable modem or your DSL modem, plus your routers, your switches, your network-attached storage, your computers. It's pretty standard. Cat 6 is pretty fast. We have Cat 6 cabling in the Tech Guy Labs here, and we're able to send 10 gigabits. That's a gigabyte a second. A gigabyte of data a second is plenty for the next few years anyway. I don't know. What is it, 8K? Is that what comes after ultra high def? Maybe your grandkids will have to worry about that.
Yeah.
All right. But conduit is a good choice, because then the grandkids can run that new super-duper premium cable made out of graphene through the wall. We had Cat 5 throughout the studio and decided at, I think, fairly great cost, I think it was $30,000, to take it out and put in Cat 6. I'm glad we put in Cat 6. We thought at the time 5E would be fine. But 5E tops out at a gigabit per second. And as it turns out, we actually save money because we can use standard kind of Ethernet stuff to transport video around. A gigabyte a second. And we're getting that. Russell, our IT guy, came in last week and said, all right, let's see if it works. And he transferred a gigabyte a second across our network. That's amazing. You have to have a gigabyte switch, you know, 10 gigabit switch and so forth. It's hard to future-proof, isn't it? Bob, Manhattan Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Leo. How are you today? Well, everybody's already asked you that.
But that's okay. You can hear I'm a little gravelly, but I'm drinking pineapple juice like our caller suggested, and it's great.
I've been through pineapple juice and cranberry juice and... Mm. You know, I'm not a young chicken, and
I think keeping it hydrated is the key, right? Just keeping it moist.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, what can I do for you?
I've got a Omega, is it? Portable hard drive. It's
like iOmega. Yeah,
yeah.
That's been a few years.
Well, and it's now I'm trying to, and it's got a bunch of my only backups on it, and the originals are gone, and I'm trying to transfer it over to a modern terabyte drive, and it comes on and it starts working, and then it loses the you know, I got the C drive and I got the D or the E, and it's a say on.
Is it a removable disk or is it just a fixed disk in there?
I don't know. It's in a case, and I don't see any way of opening.
So it's like a USB external drive. It's not like a, you know, they made zip disks in the day that you would pop out. They were like floppy disks, but they held a lot more. It's not one of those.
No. I assume it's a portable.
Yeah, it's just probably a USB drive.
Box.
Yeah.
And I got a new cable for it. Like I say, I'm looking at it, and it shows on the. On the readout, and I'm transferring, and then suddenly it goes away, and I think it makes some noises when it does it, and
yeah.
It goes out, and I'm wondering how I can get the data off of it before it dies completely.
Yeah, this is definitely a time, because it's 10 years old probably, right?
Yeah, well, that's not very old to me.
Yeah, but it is to a hard drive, let me tell you. It's not old to me either. It's a kid, but a hard drive, that's like 110 years old. It's old.
Is it based just on age or use?
Neither. It's kind of random. They've done studies on hard drive longevity, and it is true that if the hard drive survives the first few months, they tend to go a few years, but then they start failing at about 5 to 8% a year forever, and that's... Once it's failed, of course, hard to read. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you some possible solutions. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yorkshire Lad in the chat room says it's the day of the dud drives. Lots of dead hard drives. Bob in Manhattan Beach has one. It's an old iOmega USB drive. Bob, does it plug into the wall as well as the computer?
No, it's just a little... probably 4x6 or so little.
Yeah, so it's what we call self-powered. In other words, it draws the power off the USB port. That could be part of the problem.
Well, I've got a new USB cable, and then there's two other connectors which don't look quite the same, but one would be square, except it's the corners are.
Yeah, you might want to try a powered USB hub, one you plug into the wall. The problem with a self-powered drive is if it's not getting quite enough juice from the computer, it will have exactly the symptoms you're getting. Are you able to copy any files off of it?
Yeah, I get started at trying to, and then it doesn't finish. So,
but you get some.
I thought I had.
Oh, you don't get any. Well, try one file at a time. See if that works.
Well, that's what I was doing, and it wouldn't get all the way through a file.
So it's still not getting it. All right, and you're on a Windows machine.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's 8, which I hate.
Okay. Actually, that's germane because versions of Windows prior to 8 had a terrible file copy. It didn't handle errors well. In fact, that's why Microsoft created a command line program few know about called RoboCopy that was on all previous versions of Windows because it was much more robust. In fact, that's what the Robo stood for, robust copy. It would handle failures and errors better. But it's been fixed on 8, so if you're not getting files even on Windows 8, that actually is a bad sign.
Yeah, well, I get them, and I watch them for a little bit, look at the data, and then I'm trying to copy it is when it goes.
So you can open the drive and look at the stuff on the drive. You just can't get files off the drive.
Well, I can't even figure out how to open the box anyway, and I'd better stay out of it.
Yeah, but if you brought that would be, by the way, my next suggestion. First thing is, let's get enough juice to it. So try a different USB port. You're on a laptop?
Now, originally...
Hold on. Let me finish. Plug in the laptop so you got enough juice going to the laptop. If you don't have enough power going to a self-powered drive, that could be part of the problem. So I would either have a powered USB hub, get a powered drive, put power on the laptop, or try another computer, ideally a desktop computer. That is key, because I want to make sure you're getting enough power to the self-powered drive. It is an old drive, but the behavior is a little weird. The fact that you can see it and even browse it and even open files, but you can't copy the files is a little strange. It sounds like an interface issue, and that's good, because it means the data is safe on that drive. Now, we really don't want to mess around. It's your only copy. This is a problem. So what I would suggest is try it on another computer, ideally a desktop computer. If it's still doing exactly the same thing on a different computer, then you are going to want to, since you say you don't want to open it, bring it to a trusted repair shop, because they can open up the case, take that drive out and connect it and take all the data off of it. Let an expert do it. But you can definitely, we're going to get that data off of there. I don't think it's the drive. But it's old enough that I would probably say, get the data off. And then from now on, just remember, one copy is not safe. One copy of something, even if it's on a drive called my backup drive, is not a backup. A backup is two or more copies. Ruth, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ruth.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
Your sister is one of my favorite people, and you sound exactly like her.
Oh, well, that's, I guess, good.
Yes.
You're one of her favorite people, too. The fact that she sends me to ask you a question speaks very highly of you.
It must be a tough question, because Dr. Mom can answer anything.
Well, she thinks she can. Okay, so here's my question, and I am very not tech savvy at
okay,
all.
Good.
I just upgraded from a Samsung Galaxy S3 to an S5.
How exciting.
Yes. Well, I'm trying to get used to it. There's good points and bad points.
Yes.
But my Google Calendar on my little Nexus tablet that Dr. Mom had me buy works fine. My Google Calendar on my computer works fine. On my new phone, I see the calendar, but wherever I've inputted an event, I just see a blue line. I can't read anything.
What?
And I've tried looking for any way to enlarge the screen. I can't. I went in the regular settings and enlarged the font for the regular settings to see if that would make a difference. It doesn't.
You got me. I have no idea. I'm not a big fan of the S5. I did have a review unit and used it for a couple of weeks. Didn't have this problem. But I do feel like the part of the problem is that Samsung has replaced the very good, very high-quality Google software, like the calendar, with its own Samsung calendar, and I don't like it. So one thing you can do is download a different calendar and not use the Samsung calendar. In fact, that's what I prefer to do on all my Android phones. My favorite calendar, you may not want to use this because it's not free. I think it's expensive. In fact, it might be $5 or $6, is Sunrise.
No, I'll just charge it to my sister.
Get Lillian to pay for it.
Yeah.
Sunrise is awesome on Android. And so this is my biggest problem with all the Samsung devices, is that Samsung has decided that in order to differentiate themselves from every other Android device, you'll be using Samsung's own voice dictation, S-Voice, which is terrible.
I don't use it anyway, for me.
It's horrible. Well, if you did, you'd hate it. They have their own calendar, their own dialer, everything. They've replaced all the Google stuff. And that's why a lot of people refuse to buy Samsung, or if they do, they'll get the Google edition of Samsung, because it's, I think, much better written Google stuff.
Well, to be fair, I didn't have to buy the phone, so.
Well, and it's a good, the hardware is great.
But so, now here's another question. How do I download, will the Sunrise calendar transfer my Google stuff from my computer into that?
Yeah, it doesn't transfer, it just syncs up to Google. It's a window onto your Google calendar. It'll be so easy. When you run it the first time, it'll say, should I attach to your Google account? And you say, yes.
And I go download it onto my phone by going through
Google Play Store.
Okay.
So that's that little Play Store icon.
Yeah.
And one of the nice things about Android, you can also go to the web. And in your Google account, it knows all your phones. So you can go to play.google.com, search for Sunrise, and then tell it to install it on the phone from your desktop.
Well, aren't you the smartest fellow?
Well, I'm not smarter than Lillian, but
I don't know. I just looked at the Sunrise calendar, and it says free.
Yeah, oh, good. If it's free, that's great. They charge on iOS. This is the most beautiful calendar. You will love it. It's far superior to the Samsung calendar. I think it's even better than the Google calendar. And you won't have a blue line. You'll be able to read your appointments.
Well, I'm doing it right now, and thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, hey, hey. It's time to talk tech. Leo Laporte here. I'm the tech guy. Hello. May I introduce myself? Hello. We talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. Talk a lot these days about smartphones. Anything with a chip in it, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. You forgive me, I'm a little gravelly today. I don't know why. But I am drinking pineapple juice, and that seems to have helped. Rush Limbaugh eats chocolate donuts. I don't know if I'm really ready for that therapy. That's hardcore. 8888 Ask Leo. Russell is next. He's in Sholo, Arizona. Hi, Russell. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I got a couple of questions about the Xbox One. But before I get to those questions, I got to give you a little bit of a backstory. Last week, I purchased my first PlayStation 4. Brought it home, hooked it up, and got about halfway through the setup process to where it asked me to create my PlayStation account.
Yeah.
I, for some reason, am unable to create a PlayStation account for when I get to the section where it asks for my online ID. I keep getting an error message stating that the online ID is not allowed. I have been working with Sony on this problem.
They don't know either?
No.
What is the online ID? Well, I guess we can't. I don't want you to give it out, but is there an unusual character in it or?
No. It
must be a banned ID for some reason.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Have you tried other IDs?
Yeah, I've tried random IDs. I've tried using changing my username, my password, thinking they were related, and it wouldn't let me log in that way.
Now it's not the ID. It might be your IP address, or it might be. Are you using the same credit card each time, or do you even get to that point?
No. In fact, I didn't. You know, since the PlayStation Network is notorious for being hacked,
yes.
I haven't even put
smart
my credit card information online.
Smart man.
Yeah. So I've made seven different calls to tech support. The first time they told me that, well, the E3 conference is going on right now. It's being streamed. Our servers are really busy, so you won't be able to sign
okay,
up.
Okay, that's fair enough. Tomorrow. Okay, yeah, okay.
Fine. So I try the next morning, and then I get the same get a different excuse from tech support, saying, though, our site is under maintenance. Try again tomorrow. I have spent about 12 hours on the phone with tech support, and they basically have given up. They can tell me that the ID that I'm trying to use is not in use, but they can't tell me whether it's been banned or why what the reason is that I cannot register this PlayStation
ID. I think, you know, this happens sometimes where you get a user who is causing problems on the network, maybe even trying to hack it. Maybe he's going around and griefing others on the network. And so they ban an address. They say no one can use that address anymore. We do that sometimes in the chat room. But they should know, A, that that's a banned address, and they should be able to clear it if you can prove to them that you're not the same guy. Because remember, your address on the internet is not yours personally. The internet service provider sometimes moves addresses around, reassigns them, and it may be somebody who owned it a few years ago. So I have to think it's something like that. That's weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. I mean, they actually asked me, try a random set of characters. So I even tried smashing.
Yeah, but see, that's why I say it's the IP address, because it's not the ID, but the ID is attached to your internet address. They know your IP address when you sign up. That's your internet service provider. Everybody has a unique internet address. It's like your phone number.
Right.
And so that's my only thinking, is that that particular address is actually blocked.
Okay.
I've never heard of this happening. I've not seen this. If this were widespread, boy, you'd hear some hollers, because you can't play anything until you get this thing working.
Right. And I even went online, and if you look up in like the GameSpot message boards, even the Sony PlayStation message boards, there are people that are running into this problem.
Okay.
And for some reason, Sony just doesn't want to acknowledge that it exists, or they don't want to fix it. I've even tried logging into a different not only from a different computer or a different browser, but I've tried my internet connection at work. I've tried a cellular.
Oh, and you're getting the same thing?
Exact same problem.
Well, then I don't know what's going on. That it's not your IP address. It's not that you're banned. I do see that this is reported to have happened in some cases when they first came out. They had this problem for about a week, I remember. In fact, so did the Xbox One. Because servers were busy. But I'm just baffled that this is an ongoing problem. It doesn't seem like a good way to do business.
Mm-hmm. So my question is then, I'm thinking about going maybe with the Xbox One. The problem is I loathe...
Have you ever had a PlayStation before?
I had a PlayStation 1 and a PlayStation 2.
Did you have a Sony account?
No. This would be the PlayStation 4 was my first online console.
That's so weird. I don't know. It's got to be on their end, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the unit. You know, you might try seeing... Did you ask them, hey, could it be the hardware itself?
I thought about that, but the console seemed to work great. I tried it both on the console and on a PC, and I get the same result. So... I don't know.
Well, I use an Xbox One. I have a PlayStation 3, but I decided to go with the Xbox One, for a variety of reasons. But you still will have to log into a Microsoft account.
Okay. I've been doing some research on the Xbox One, and that was my question. I noticed the Xbox One uses DDR3 RAM instead of DDR5, and I was wondering if that...
Have you seen the... let me highly recommend the Big Bang Theory episode. I think you can find it on YouTube. It's called Pass the Butter, in which Sheldon is trying to convince his girlfriend to listen to him while he debates the relative merits of the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4. And that's exactly, by the way, one of the questions. But the PlayStation 4 has DDR5. On the other hand, the Xbox One has DDR3, but perhaps they're being... You know what? on paper, the PlayStation 4 on paper is superior in several ways. Faster processor, faster RAM. It can do some games. Watch Dogs, which is a popular game on both platforms, I think it's 960 on the PlayStation 4 and 720 on the Xbox One. So nominally, the PlayStation 4 would look better, lines. But I don't think you can tell the difference, and it's fine. And I don't worry too much about that.
Yeah, that was my second question, actually, too, as I noticed the Xbox One only runs at 720p, and I was...
Yeah, these are all numbers. These are all stats. Now, a PlayStation 4, and I don't know why this has become a religious war, but it has. I guess we don't have anything more important to fight about. But for some reason, the PlayStation folks and the Xbox folks are just in a heated battle over which console is better. PlayStation is outselling Xbox pretty heavily, and I think part of the reason is on paper it's better. But you know what? It's not on paper that you use it. You use it with games. The real problem is, in terms of games, there's not much to choose between the two of them. Neither has much content, and the exclusive content even less. So there's no obvious preferred solution because, it, you know, you can play Watch Dogs on both. I don't, Titanfall is on the Xbox. That's so big deal, right? I don't think it's enough to sell it. I don't think the numbers are enough to sell it. I don't think it matters. Pick the one you like.
Well, the one thing that I really disliked about, the Xbox One was, I know they fixed this in the June update where you had to pay for the Xbox Gold account.
They did get rid of that. Thank goodness. That was stupid. You couldn't use Netflix unless you paid them $100 a year. That's crazy. You're already paying Netflix. They have eliminated that. That's gone.
Okay. The other thing I heard, though, is that you still have to pay for the Xbox Gold in order to use Skype.
I don't know. That may be true. That may be true. I can't help you here. You, as far as I'm concerned, six of one, half a dozen of the other. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88. It's funny. I rewatched, and I highly recommend... I wonder, should I just play a little bit of that Big Bang Theory where Sheldon and his girlfriend Amy are debating the merits of the PlayStation? No, I won't bother, but it's worth seeing. It's on YouTube. The merits of the PlayStation 4 versus the Xbox One. And the truth is, there isn't that much difference. And there's, in fact, at this point, to be honest, I wouldn't recommend getting either one. Because neither is downward compatible with its predecessor. So if you have a PlayStation 3 or an Xbox 360, you're going to be playing those games. And you're going to keep that old machine because you can't play any of those games on the new machine. And the new machine only has a dearth of games. That's under, I don't know what it is, it's under 20. Most of them not very good. So I would wait until that one game that you have to get it for. I thought Watch Dogs might be it. I like Watch Dogs a lot. It's a fun game. You're running around in an open world. You're a hacker. You can hack into almost anything. And you get to decide whether you're going to be good or bad. They've got missions and there's driving. And it's a video game. Maybe I'm getting old. I don't find it quite as all-consuming as I seem to remember games used to be. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Lucy's in Torrance. Hi, Lucy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Very, very long time listener.
Thank you.
First time caller.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the call. I have to tell you, I have learned just about everything I know about anything computer from you, and I appreciate it because I'm not particularly tech savvy otherwise.
Okay.
The reason for my call is, believe it or not, I just now got my very first laptop. I've always had desktops. It's a Dell Inspiron, and I got it, and this is a first, allegedly, for Dell. They have a version of Microsoft Office 2013 mm-hmm. that was part of the purchase price and included in the computer.
Okay.
I did my 25-digit product key thing, and it got active. And when I was using it in the house, everything was fine. And I brought it down to the office. Now, the office is an old building. It doesn't have any internet access. There's no Wi-Fi. There's nothing. So I tried with both direct power and with battery. And from the very beginning, a file that I had copied onto the computer from the desktop, which was a Windows 2003 file, a Word file, actually. It kept stalling. It wouldn't respond. I couldn't save it. And then, in general, the machine wouldn't do anything for me. I would try to get out of that screen, and I would keep seeing that little blue circle that's taken the place of the hourglass. And I just couldn't do anything. I couldn't get out of it. I couldn't close it except do a hard power shutdown. When I, you know, the settings would come up for me to shut it down, you know, normally, I couldn't do it. And I'm trying to figure out if the software is bad or...
No. And when you get home, does it work all right?
Yeah, and this is the thing that's troubling.
So that's really interesting. So the only difference is when you get to the office, there's no internet access. But when you get home, and the computer doesn't work at all, it sounds like, but when you get home, everything works fine.
Yeah, and the thing is, I spend a lot of time, I work during the weekends, and I'm in the office, and I'd like to be able
to... Yeah, it should work.
Do some
and,
work. Yeah,
and there's no reason it shouldn't work, so...
Leo, I called the Nimrods at Dell.
Yeah.
Okay? And... from the office, and
you didn't call them Nimrods to their face, I hope.
No, I don't think
okay. Hey, you Nimrods, this thing ain't working.
I don't think they would have gotten it if you get my drift.
Yes.
But anyway, I had said to them, listen, I know you can't remote control my machine the way you can when I have internet, but can't you walk me through the process? And they seemed totally incapable of doing that.
Well, I might be too, because I don't know. It's puzzling. It's not obvious. Now, there's one thing I would mention is the latest version of Office, by default, does not save on your hard drive. It saves in the internet. It saves saves the file up to the cloud. And if it couldn't get to the cloud, it might say, well, I don't know what to do. So make sure you're saving when you save in Microsoft Office on your Inspiron. Make sure you're look in the Save As dialog and make sure you are not saving it to OneDrive, but to your local hard drive.
Now, would that also be the case for this file that I was trying to open? That was a Word 2003 file that I was just trying to access, that I had copied onto the laptop and tried to access.
So you know what I think. The other possibility, no, it shouldn't. So the other possibility is that you don't have the full Office installed yet. Microsoft did something that was a little weird, and I thought this would be problematic, and maybe this is what's happening. When you first run Office, it allows you to run it as it continues to download Office in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like maybe when you disconnected from the internet, you stopped that process, and you don't actually have a complete Office. So what I would do is I'd get online at home, and I'd really use Office. I'd launch everything. I'd make sure you got everything on there. You do the updates. Make sure you do the Windows updates and the Office updates. And leave it online for, overnight or whatever. 'Cause I'm a little concerned that maybe you didn't get all the pieces.
So you don't think it's hardware related at all?
Well, I don't. It's impossible for me to know. But
right.
I do know that one of the things that Microsoft has changed is, you know, they really, and this is the future, but it's a problem when you're not online. They really want you to do stuff in the cloud.
Right,
and
I understand.
Why does your office not have internet access?
Well, and this is the my office is archaic. The building was built in 65, and God forbid the boss thinks we've joined the modern era.
I think you need to tell the boss, I love these Selectrics, but maybe the internet could be useful, boss.
Leo, not even a typewriter here. There's not a Mimeo. There's nothing.
What?
We have hands. We have pens.
What is the business?
We are an apartment management company.
And you do it all on paper?
Well, let's put it this way. The big boss, of course, has computers over in their office.
Oh, yeah, but not for you.
On our property, we are at the Stone Age level.
That's terrible.
We're coming from the mountain next.
That's terrible. All right, so that it could be that's the issue. I mean, unfortunately, nowadays, when you make a computer, you just, I think, often assume, well, it's always going to be online. And that they may have made some software decisions that you know, things don't work as well when they're not online. So I'm suspicious that that's the problem.
Leo, should I call Microsoft about it or should I call Dell about it?
Well, here's the other problem. Microsoft, when you buy a Windows computer from an OEM like Dell,
right, OEM,
Microsoft
yeah.
says the OEM is responsible for support. Now, I don't know about Office. Office, it may be Microsoft. So I would call Office support.
Okay.
Because I think that Dell can't support you very well, as you see on that. My suggestion is reinstall Office and make sure it does a full install. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I'm sorry about my gravelly throat. No pain. I think it's just allergies, but I apologize for the... A radio announcer should not sound like this. Alan on the line from Marina Del Rey, California. Hi, Alan.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for picking it up, man.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
Well, get me out of this depression.
Uh-oh. What's the matter?
Okay, I got this iMac running Parallels. And I don't know when this happened, but all of a sudden, I can't play. My Windows Media Player isn't working. I've got Windows Media Player error C00D11BA, which tells me it's not working. Gee, that's brilliant.
You know, those error messages are so darn useful.
Yeah, duh. So,
They just crack me up, and you'd think in this day and age they would have finally figured out that that kind of error message is good for nobody except the guy who wrote the program. And even that guy probably doesn't know what the heck it means. So why tell me WD0A30594? Who cares?
Really?
You just don't work. You're crashed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was on the tech support with Parallels for an hour and a half. They couldn't figure it out. They've kicked it up to some, escalated to somebody. I don't know where they
are. Well, I mean, there's nothing really to figure out. It's a problem with Windows Media Player. I presume you've done the prophylactic things that anyone would recommend, like reinstalling it.
No.
Okay, so Windows Media Player does not... What version of Windows are you using?
12. I mean, Windows 7. I got Media Player 12.
So as I remember, even Windows 7 did not come with Media Player. You had to download it.
I don't know.
I think so. I can't remember myself. Microsoft no longer really is a fan of Media Player.
I see.
What are you trying to play back?
Just MP3s, you know, my music collection.
So just let's dump Media Player, which was never very good anyway.
Uh-huh.
Even Microsoft doesn't like it anymore.
Right.
They've stopped bundling it with Windows. I guess 7 did come with Media Player, but 8 does not.
I see.
There are numerous excellent media players. I like Media Monkey.
I see.
And I think you'll like it better because it has much better playlist management. It is really, it's a really great program. It's free.
Okay.
MediaMonkey.com.
All right.
There's also VLC. There's Winamp. There's a dozen of them. And the reason there's so many of them is because nobody wants to use Media Center.
I see. Well, QuickTime isn't even working.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and
That may be related. They may be interacting with one another.
Well, I can get rid of both of them. But,
yeah, I would. The only reason you have QuickTime is if you use iTunes.
I see. I don't use iTunes.
Yeah,
anymore.
Uninstall QuickTime. You don't need to uninstall Media Player, but do install. I would try Media Monkey. VLC, which is from videoland.org. Both are free.
Okay.
VLC comes with codecs for everything, but since you're just playing MP3s, that's simple.
Well, WAV files, too, actually.
Yeah, anything can play WAV files, anything can play MP3s. It's the weird online codecs like MKV and DivX and stuff that some players have trouble with. But for audio, Media Monkey is great. It lets you organize. You can has visualizations.
Uh-huh.
It's just a great player. I highly recommend it.
Well, you know, what I did, too, is I tried to go to restore back to, you know, my earliest restore point I could find, and I can't restore my computer. And it gives me a message saying that, I can't remember what the exact message.
Now you said you're using this in virtualization?
Yeah.
On a Macintosh?
Yes.
You know, normally, which VM are you using? Parallels?
Parallels, yeah.
You know, Parallels has, I don't remember what they call it, it's a snapshot feature. That's what VMware calls it. I don't know what Parallels calls
it. Yeah, snapshot.
They do call it snapshot. That's a better way because the problem with restore is it's fragile.
Uh-huh.
And also, a lot of malware will block restore. So if you should get infected, and by the way, even though you're in virtualization, you can easily get infected. It's just Windows.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So a snapshot, what you do is you get a good VM setup that's got everything you want, and you snapshot it.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of system restore, you just throw it out and you restore the snapshot.
I wonder where the snapshots are stored because I remember it's done that a couple of times.
It does it automatically. Just go into the menus and you'll be able to see snapshots.
I should be able to find that.
That's better, frankly, than the system. System restore never works very well anyway, and it's very fragile. And if you get malware or even something weird goes on, it'll stop working.
Well, I'll try that Media Monkey first and then the snapshot.
You'll love Media Monkey. It's great. Because you're running in virtualization, you really don't have to worry about Windows. If it starts to get fragile, you just go back with a snapshot instead. Paul on I-10, driving down the highway, trucking.
How are you, sir?
I'm well, Paul. Welcome.
Hey, question for you. The new Adobe came out on Thursday.
Yes.
The new Adobe platform.
Yes.
And when Apple quit making the Mac Power for the 8 gig, I ended up buying the 12 core.
Okay.
What
are you doing? Are you a video editor or a photographer? What do you do?
Video editing.
Yeah, so you need all that power.
I do need that power, okay. And what I'm running into now is the graphics card that came with. I didn't upgrade it or didn't get anything better.
Yeah.
Every graphics card out there is saying, hey, this will work on Mac, and then when you read all the fine print,
yeah.
If you're in boot camp.
Yeah, I've used third-party. Yeah, that's because it's drivers. I've used third-party cards on a Mac. Don't recommend it. Use the one that came with the Mac. Or if you have to use a third-party card, get one made for Macintosh, which really narrows your selection down. Because otherwise, the cables are different and the drivers are different. You need Mac-specific drivers. That's why it says, oh, it works with Windows. By the way, we've moved our video editing to Premiere on PCs because of this.
Yeah. Well, even the guys at Adobe dumped Mac and are now
it's so sad.
On PCs.
It's so sad. I'm a Mac fanatic. I love Macs. I bought the new Mac Pro. I'm a huge fan, but Apple doesn't seem to care about the high-end user anymore. They make so much money on the iPhone and the iPad, they say, well, you know. Have fun.
Well, look at when 10 came out, Final Cut 10.
Right.
Look how much of a
we didn't upgrade. We didn't upgrade because we couldn't. We wanted to use a SAN and it wouldn't support it. So my suggestion is to stick with the video card that came with your Mac.
So because I've reached out to some of the people at Adobe and they're saying, you know, use NVIDIA stuff because that's.
Well, but yeah, you can use it. In fact, you can buy an NVIDIA card, but you got to buy it from somebody that makes a Mac version. The hardware is the same, but as you've discovered, the software is not. And actually, the cables are not. So you want to make sure you get a Mac one, and that really limits your choice because nobody's made. Go to MacSales.com, Otherworld Computing. They sell stuff that's made for Mac.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Paul. I'm sorry that we have to go through this. And by the way, what Adobe did, which I'm not a fan of when they upgraded to the new Creative Cloud, and they did this at least for Photoshop. I don't know if they did it for other programs. Maybe they did it for Premiere. I don't know. They made it a whole new program. Instead of upgrading the one on my hard drive, they installed a full new copy of Photoshop. And that caused a problem, and this might be related, because none of my plugins got moved over. And I would imagine any additional stuff that you'd added to your Photoshop or your Premiere would not get moved over. You have to manually move it over, which is bizarre. It's just very strange. I'm not sure why Adobe did it that way, but I'm presuming that now we're moved over, it won't happen again. What we've done here, because we do a lot of video editing, all the shows that I do on our podcast network, Twit, are audio as well as video. And so our editors actually work in video and they extract an audio version of the show. We were working on Final Cut. We've now moved to Premiere, Adobe's Premiere. We run it on Macs and PCs. But when it's time to buy new hardware, we're going to be buying PCs. Breaks my heart. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jim in Melbourne, Florida. Hello, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Jimmy.
I love that little sound the phone system makes. That's the new sound. When somebody hangs up on me, instead of clattering and slamming, it just makes a pleasant little boom, pop. Kenny, San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi there. How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you, Kenny?
Great to speak with you again. This is my second time calling, long-time listener.
Awesome.
I have a son named Leo. That's always cool.
Well, I am honored.
We named him after you.
No, you didn't, but that's okay.
So I got two quick questions. First of all, is there any easy way to sync Microsoft Office with Mail?
Apple Mail?
Yes.
So you use Outlook right now on a Windows machine, and you want to get it over to Apple?
No, I use Outlook right now for Mac on my MacBook Pro. I'm like you. I got the new MacBook Pro, of course. And
so you want to get your mail out of Outlook into Mail, Apple Mail?
Yeah. Like, I signed up for the account. It downloaded, I guess, whatever was sitting on the server.
So where is your mail? Who's your mail service provider? Outlook?
It's like the people that that manage my website for me.
Got it. So they're running a POP server or an IMAP server?
You know what? I put it in as a POP server, but I think it works either way if I do the settings as an IMAP or a POP.
Okay. So the reason I ask is the mail, if it's an IMAP server, is still on the server. It's not just in your Outlook on your Macintosh. POP, the old-fashioned form of email, you would download it all and then it would delete it from the server. That's when hard drive space was expensive and your ISP or your provider didn't want to keep your email. They said, get it and get out of here. We've moved away from that. Most people don't do that anymore because people nowadays have more than one computing device. They have a smartphone. They have a tablet. They want their mail to look the same on all of them. And the problem with POP, if you download the mail on one device, it's not available to any of the other devices. So if it is an IMAP server.
I know that after years and years of having no clue what that meant.
Now you know.
I don't think anybody really knows.
No, that's why. That's good. It means I have job security.
Exactly. So it must be an IMAP since when I set up the account settings, it downloaded like 600 messages or whatever.
That's good news. That means you just set it up on Mail, Apple Mail, as an IMAP server and say, go ahead and get the mail, and it'll get everything that was there.
Okay.
Now, it may not go all the way back to the beginning of time. It depends on how they've set it up at the ISP.
Right.
But if it does, then that's great.
Okay, perfect.
And just continue to get it as an IMAP thing. If it doesn't, then you have to export the mail from Outlook and import it and mail, and it's an imperfect process at best.
So is there any way to do the folders and like all the signatures that I have set up?
Well, and that's another huge advantage to IMAP. The folders and all of that stuff is duplicated on the server. So you may see, if you're lucky, you log in and there's all your folders and there's everything you've ever sent, everything you've sorted out, everything you've marked is all there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're lucky, that'll be that way. If not, then you probably
do it the old-fashioned way.
You'll have to manually configure it this once, but as long as you continue to use IMAP, you'll never have to do it again.
Okay, that's cool. I have one other question, which I think is a little bit more complicated, so I wanted to make sure I got my mail thing first since I deal with that more often.
Yes.
I might just have to do the old-fashioned way on this too, which is we have a monitor that I use. Well, basically, I've got a Mac Mini set up at my front desk, and when people walk in, I'll show them the tours that we offer because I own a tour company.
Oh, that's neat.
So I called you about the tour menu.
I remember that. Yeah, okay.
Cool. So what I'm doing now, and this might not be the best decision, but I basically have this Mac Mini connected to two monitors, and one of which is mirroring. So if somebody comes in, we just click the tour category that they want to look at, the tours, and then that way we can scroll in front of them and just show them all of the tours.
So you have your monitor that you're looking at, and they're looking over your shoulder at a big screen.
No, the monitors are back to back, and I'm standing at the
corner. You're right next to them. All right.
Yeah, I'm right in front of them. They're looking at what I'm looking at on the monitor, which I thought is a great thing if, you know, we're looking at stuff that guests are supposed to see. So I wanted to see if there's an easy way to turn the mirroring off, or if you have to go into preferences and all that.
Well, but it's pretty easy. Are you on a Mac? Yeah, you said it's a Mini.
A Mac.
Yeah, just go into preferences, the display preferences, and uncheck mirroring.
And uncheck mirroring, and then that'll go to like some blank desktop page or something.
Well, you'll have two screens. And it depends. I mean, if you haven't put anything on that second screen,
I don't think you'll.
Yeah. But you can then drag a window from one screen to the other screen.
Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. If I had them facing.
When it's not mirrored, it's what we call extended desktop. So those two screens represent a single desktop.
Yeah.
And you see in the display control panel, you can maneuver around.
Of course. Yeah. I thought maybe there might be some trick to it or whatever.
No, and you can get little extensions, little menu commands that allow you to do display settings from the menu. If you're going to switch it on and off a lot, You could do something like that. But it's not such a hard thing to go into the display control panel.
And then I was thinking, well, if I'm going to go this far, might as well maybe step on the other side of the counter and have one of, like, the touch screen, like, not a tablet, but,
fancy.
Like, a touch screen. Like, I don't know.
Fancy.
The HP, I know, makes the...
Fancy.
Yeah.
So then your customers could use the menus by touching instead of a mouse.
Exactly. They would actually be able to control the... Yeah. The things that they're looking
at. That's how people like to do. Sometimes we call that kiosk mode, where it's like a kiosk and they control it. You'd need a touch operating system. Apple does not really support that
right. With
the desktop. They do with the iPad. Or you can get, as you said, you can get a Windows machine and do it.
Exactly. Like, I see all the new Windows machines. They look like they have all of that.
Yep.
But I think that people are more comfortable using the iPad. Like, almost everyone's used an iPad.
I agree. So I would use iOS.
If I do it, I would just use an iPad.
Yeah, I would. That's how I would do it. I don't think we have enough time for another caller. No, Heather Hammond, we do not. But we are going to get the heck out of here, and we thank you so much for being here, Heather Hammond, my phone ranger, taking all the calls, grooming you so nicely for your on-air appearance, your 15 seconds of fame. Nathan Staten, our musical director, who has managed once again to surprise, amaze, and amuse with his eclectic musical tastes. And thanks to all of you for joining us, and all the stations up and down the Tech Guy Network for taking the show. I will be back next week. Don't forget, in 2 weeks, I'm taking a little vacation, and our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, will be at the helm taking care of business. So get your home theater questions ready for him on July 5th and 6th. Meanwhile, if you have questions or you want to know about something I mentioned on the show, find a link or comment on anything I've said. That's the website, techguylabs.com. Great place to go we've got a search engine. It's free. There's no charge, no subscription necessary. You can search all 1,094 shows, find that answer to your question, or you can even go show by show, question by question, hour by hour. You can even watch the whole thing. We make audio and video available a few days after the show ends so that you can see what you missed. You never have to miss a show. And thanks to James DeRuvo for writing those notes down, and Josh Windisch for cultivating it all and putting it all together. Have a great Geek Week. I'll see you after Google I.O. We'll talk about all of Google's announcements next week. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.